Spots of white light. A dial flickers. A needle sits on a record. That's why everyone hates us, because of all these killings. Archive war film.
In the aftermath of World War II, ordinary German soldiers claimed they knew nothing about the Holocaust. They blamed all its atrocities on the SS.
All the Jews were executed. We saw one of these executions once.
We were actually there when a pretty girl was shot.
That's too bad.
But she knew she was going to be shot.
Now, new evidence, only recently discovered, exposes the full extent of that lie.
What did they do to the children?
They seized three-year-olds by the hair, held them up and shot them with a pistol, threw them in. Saw it for myself.
The evidence comes from one of the most audacious operations ever conducted by British intelligence. German prisoners of war were secretly bugged, and the conversations they thought private, transcribed word for word.
In the transcripts, we found totally new knowledge about war crimes, about huge war crimes.
I had an hour to spare, and we went to some barracks. And there we slaughtered 1,500 Jews.
These were German soldiers as they'd never been heard before. Uncensored and unguarded. But the recordings were destroyed, and the transcripts locked away for decades.
This operation was what was called top secret. I did not tell even my closest family what I had been doing for about 50 years after the war.
Now declassified, some of the most chilling of these conversations can be reconstructed for the first time.
But she let you sleep with her too.
Yes, I mean, you couldn't tell that she was a Jewess. She was quite a nice type too. It was just a shame that she had to
die with everybody else.
75,000 Jews were shot there.
These are their stolen confessions.
All dialogue dramatized in this program has been taken from the original MI-19 manuscripts. Spying on Hitler's army, the secret recordings. 1940, black and white footage of bombers and tanks in action.
We are in the preliminary stage of one of the greatest battles in history. I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat.
In the chaos and carnage of total war, high-grade intelligence was as vital as fighting power.
Bugs are set up.
MI-19, a department of the War Office, set out to exploit German prisoners of war in the most ambitious surveillance operation ever attempted. Three stately homes were converted into unlikely prison camps and wired for sound. Nowhere was out of range of MI-19's specially designed microphones.
Dr. Helen Fry, author of The M-Room.
There were bugging devices in the lamp fittings, behind mirrors, in the fireplaces. It was a huge operation and something this technical and sophisticated had never been undertaken before. British were very clever at thinking into the mindset of how they could get intelligence from the enemy. And it was a very British thing to do, actually.
Joshua Levine.
We're very used nowadays to the idea of conversations being bugged. People weren't during the Second World War. This was the beginning of modern surveillance. This was entirely new.
Hidden away out of view were the listening rooms, filled with state-of-the-art disc recording equipment.
I was told to report to the commanding officer that what I was going to do was probably more important for the war effort than if I drove a tank or fired a machine gun.
So, what can you tell me about Nickerbein?
Captured German soldiers were brought to the UK and interrogated. Those considered an intelligence asset were sent to the wired locations, where listeners were ready and waiting for them to start talking.
I'll tell you my experience.
On the second day of the Polish war, I had to drop bombs on a station at Poznan. Now, 8 out of the 16 bombs
fell on the town among the houses. I didn't like that, but I said to myself, how orders are orders.
We knew that the microphones must have been of very high quality because we could hear the prisoners very clearly, And even if they whispered to their cellmate, it was very often possible to pick up what they said.
On the third day, I didn't care. And on the fourth day, I was enjoying it. It was our before breakfast entertainment.
To chase single soldiers across the fields with machine gun fire and leave them lying there with a few bullets in the back.
They weren't being interrogated. They weren't minding what they were saying. They weren't being very careful not to give anything away. They were speaking to their equals in what they thought was privacy.
We attacked civilians in the street, all machine guns firing like mad, and you should have seen the horses stampede.
The recordings were translated into English, and transcripts circulated right up to Churchill himself.
The system is called X-Gerät. I'll tell you how it works. A beam is sent on a short wave.
Day in, day out, they're picking up snippets of information from the prisoners. And in fact, there was very little, when one works through the transcripts, there was very little that we didn't actually know about the German military capability.
Only now is the full story of this unprecedented bugging operation becoming clear. And it was only by chance that the secret transcripts were discovered at all.
Dialogue recorded 30th of April 1940. A trolley of files is pushed through a records archive.
German historian Zunke Neitzel was on a routine research trip to the National Archives in London. He'd ordered up some files on U-boat crews. What arrived on his desk was the discovery of a lifetime.
I just ordered three files and had these three huge, massive files on my desk. And so I start reading that. September 43, German Navy personnel. And it was so authentic. You could really just see the people speaking to each other.
Zunke had been given 800 pages of transcripts. The archives contained a further 49,000.
And then at that moment, I realized I might be standing on a tip of an iceberg.
There were some 20 men with machine guns.
The recordings themselves appear to have been destroyed. Only the transcripts remain.
I almost felt sorry for him.
The transcribers had even faithfully noted how the original words were spoken.
She called to us and said she was going to be shot.
You were really able to see these people talking. You were able to get a feeling of the killing, the fighting, the dying, the war.
Colonel Kevin Farrell.
When I saw the documents, one of the things that struck me was that how real they were. I mean, the discussions, the way they conducted themselves, this is how soldiers talk.
Footage of soldiers fighting, firing machine guns, and bombs exploding.
For the first desperate years of war, British intelligence had few prisoners to spy on. But in 1942, Britain's fortunes changed. Victory over the Germans in North Africa brought thousands of POWs, among them the first senior officers, including the highly prized General Wilhelm Ritter von Thoma.
Reenactment in colour of the general being driven in the back of an army vehicle.
Von Thoma was taken back to London to be confined in the bugged stately home reserved for officers, Trent Park.
A grey-haired man watches them arrive.
His capture was a coup. Von Thoma knew the intimate secrets of Hitler's military machine. But though a proud patriot, he was not a Nazi Party member. He was met by the welfare officer, Lord Aberfeldy.
When I was captured, the Italian generals, who were taken at the same time, arrived with a load of luggage. They looked like tourists. I immediately said, please, don't put them with me.
Von Thoma is very intelligent and exceedingly well-read. He has a striking personality and is violently anti-Nazi.
He's taken to a sitting room.
Von Thoma joined General Ludwig Kruvel, who had also been captured in North Africa, when his aircraft had accidentally landed at a British airfield.
Kruvel is a follower and admirer of Hitler, an ignorant, stupid, sentimental, vain, and self-satisfied type of Prussian senior officer.
Holding such strong opposing political views, von Thoma and Kruvel inevitably clashed. And when they did so, the recorders were ready.
The stupid thing about our propaganda is that it's entirely negative.
Your attitude is negative.
No. But the propaganda shouldn't
be... Everything else is bad, wherever you go.
Things are bad, according to you.
There are a lot of things that are bad.
Of course there are. And for the English, everything is all right.
For British intelligence, this infighting between their lab rats was a revelation.
I think you have to understand that German was not synonymous with Nazi. Not every German officer was necessarily Nazi in outlook. And the British needed to understand why some Germans were Nazis, why others weren't.
Lulled into a false sense of security, the prisoners talked freely amongst themselves. The trap, so carefully set by MI-19, was working as planned.
All dialogue dramatized in this program has been taken from the original MI-19 transcripts.
Ah, this is not the end. It is not even the beginning of the end. But it is perhaps the end of the beginning.
An army 4x4 pulls up at a guarded house.
The captured generals brought to Trent Park were shown full respect for their rank.
Inside...
They never imagined the courtesy and luxurious surroundings were part of an ingenious plan to lure them off guard.
German generals were really astonished how nice it was in Trent Park. I mean, they were supplied with newspapers, they could listen to radio. Sometimes they struggled with the British food, but normally they were quite comfortable. The British obviously did this not because they were caring for these generals, because they knew if we treat them well... they will speak.
The Führer's idea is a sound one.
The Führer envisages a Europe under our absolute control. I am firmly convinced that is the only way that Western civilization can be saved.
Tapping the conversations of the German generals would provide for British intelligence far more than they were ever anticipating. Now we get an insight into the mindset of the higher echelons of the Nazi regime.
General von Thoma's escorted outside.
To break the monotony of confinement and disarm them further, the guests, as MI-19 liked to call their captives, were indulged with day trips to London. And, on occasion, to luncheon at the exclusive Simpsons in the Strand. The generals were trapped in a world of deception. Nothing was what it seemed, and that included Lord Aberfeldy, their welfare officer.
Of course, he wasn't a real lord. He was an MI-19 officer, but he gained their trust because they kind of began to believe that he was on their side in an odd sort of way. But of course, little did they know, these German generals, that even the trees were bucked.
Once Lord Aberfeldy had earned their trust, he exploited it. His casual questions were deliberately leading and timed to be within range of a microphone.
I've read that the generals are taking over now and that the Nazi party is being pushed aside to some extent.
If things get really bad, the party will go, I can assure you, because so much hatred has been stored up. Of course, they'll try everything possible in order to stay in power, but you know, a few thousand Gestapo men... can't keep down a people of 80 million if the people are no longer willing.
But the SS at home, couldn't the SS suppress a revolutionary movement?
No. If it really broke out, it would be impossible.
His real name was Ian Munro, and the British went even so far to put him in a distant relationship to the royal family, so they felt quite oppressed.
The generals listened to a radio in their luxury sitting room.
The generals were supplied with a radio, books, newspapers. MI-19 hoped that keeping them in touch with the outside world would provoke useful conversations.
A microphone's hidden in the chandelier above them.
The triumphant conclusion of the Battle of Stalingrad, with the capture of 8 more German generals and 45,000 other prisoners in the past 2 days, has overshadowed the rest of the news from Russia.
And it was radio news of the German defeat at Stalingrad that would give Trent Park its biggest breakthrough.
Colonel Kevin Farrell, military historian.
The defeat at Stalingrad affected the German generals profoundly. This is the first all-out defeat. It was unambiguous. It was a disaster.
The humiliating surrender of General Paulus brought even von Thoma and Kruvel together in shared dismay.
I would have rather blown my brains out. I am bitterly disappointed. Bitterly disappointed in Paulus.
Yes, it's terrible.
And that so many generals surrendered.
It's frightful. 26 of them.
The possibility of military defeat was a bitter prospect for such proud warriors. Later, von Thoma discussed with Kruvel a new secret weapon that might yet save their beloved fatherland.
This rocket business. I saw it once. There's a special testing site. They've got these huge things. They said they'd go up 15 kilometers into the stratosphere.
How do you aim?
You can only aim at an area, at some central point. You're bound to hit somewhere. It's horrible. But the major there was full of hope. He said, wait until next year and the fun will start. It was all very secret.
Von Thoma was talking about the deadly V-2 being tested at Peenemünde on the North German coast. It was the first rocket to be fired through the stratosphere, and there was no defense against it.
Historic footage of a launch.
Now von Thoma had given conclusive evidence that it was not a fiction.
This is crucial information for British intelligence. No longer is it in the realm of whispers or hearsay or what it is. These are two high-ranking individuals that have knowledge of a top-secret program that the Germans hope will turn the war in their favor.
Von Thoma's evidence persuaded Bomber Command to carry out a high-risk raid on Peenemünde. The V-2 site was destroyed, and the rocket's use delayed by several months, buying the Allies valuable time.
The V-2 certainly could have had a dramatic impact on the Allied landings at Normandy. Certainly they wouldn't have gone off on as planned, and they might have failed overall.
But it wasn't just operational secrets that MI-19 was hoping to gather. Generals were dividing into factions, those who supported the Nazis and those who did not.
Every day that this war continues constitutes a war crime. They should put Adolf Hitler in a padded cell.
And it was very important that these people revealed their secrets, because if they were with the Nazis, then Hitler had a future. If they were against the Nazis, there was a possibility there might be a coup, there was a possibility that Germany might go in a different direction. So it was very important the British understood the thought processes of this officer class.
General Kruvel headed those who supported the Führer, while General von Thoma led the anti-Nazi faction.
I always say, no matter how many faults this system has, nor how wrong it is, I have served under this system. I have fought under this system. My soldiers have fallen under this system. So I cannot, the moment things go wrong, say to hell with it. No, I won't do that.
Kruvel was fighting for his Führer. He was fighting for Hitler. And he tried to take all these ideas of the Third Reich seriously. And obviously he also saw negative things. But he tried to avoid that, yeah, to put this under the carpet somehow.
I regret every bomb, every scrap of material, and every human life that's still being wasted in this senseless war. The only gain it will bring us is an end to 10 years of gangster rule.
Von Thoma represents the traditional German officer. He's well-read, he's old world, if you would. He's very comfortable in academic and intellectual circles. Such an individual with such a background would look at a relatively low-born, coarse individual like Adolf Hitler. He would have looked at him with suspicion, if not outright disgust.
Hostilities reached a climax when a young officer, Lieutenant Klaus Hubuck,
sir,
told Kruvel that von Thoma had made derogatory remarks about the Führer. Acting on this report, Kruvel confronted von Thoma, and the recorders were running.
I would like to discuss something with you.
Certainly.
Hubuck came to see me and asked me to tell you not to try to influence him with propaganda.
What's all this about?
He said you gave him your views on the situation.
Because he talks such a damn lot of nonsense. Fancy saying all English newspapers are Jewish.
I have a thoroughly good impression of him. But the boy is bound to feel upset when you say to him, Hitler isn't normal.
It's common knowledge he's not normal.
I don't agree. I also know that you're saying that to everyone. And I know that a great many people take exception to it. Don't make any mistake about that. A great many people here are not at all amused when you say that.
All right. Tell me who they are.
I shall be delighted to tell you.
Well, tell me then.
Well, I must ask them first.
All right, then. Bring them to me.
I will.
And we'll see what happens.
Right, I will.
And they shall come with you.
I'll see to that.
With you?
I will.
Von Thoma walks away, leaving Kruvel fuming on the landing.
As the generals in Trent Park argued over Hitler's sanity, the listeners were hearing accounts of how far that madness had spread.
We saw one of these executions once.
Believe me, if you'd have seen it, it would have made you shudder.
Did they shoot them with machine guns?
With submachine guns.
Horst Minier was one of a new intake of POWs who had seen action on the Eastern Front.
Black and white film of soldiers running.
They were the shock troops of the Nazis' ideological fight against Jews and communists.
Dead bodies are laid in rows.
And in a special decree signed by Hitler himself, they had been given free rein to act without restraint.
A group of soldiers surrenders.
The war in the East is a completely different war. Torture is not prohibited. In fact, the civilian population is quite literally eliminated in many cases and always treated ruthlessly.
We were actually there when a pretty girl was shot.
That's too bad.
But she knew she was going to be shot. We were going past on motorcycles and we saw a procession, and suddenly she called to us and she said that they were going to be shot. And at first we thought she was making some sort of joke.
But did she walk there in her clothes?
Yeah, she was smartly dressed. She certainly was an incredible girl.
Surely the one who shot her shot wide.
And nobody could do anything about it. The guys were standing there with their machine guns. They clipped on a magazine, fired to the right and to the left, and that was that. It didn't matter whether they were still alive or not. When they were hit, they fell over backwards into a pit, and then the next lot came up.
What about the people who were in there who are not dead yet?
Well, that's bad luck for them. They died down there. And I can tell you, you heard a terrific screaming and shrieking.
Were you watching when the pretty Jewess was there?
No, we weren't there then. All we know is that she was shot.
Well, had you met her before?
Yes, she cleaned our barracks. The week we were staying there, we went to the barracks to sleep so we didn't have to stay outside.
I bet she let you sleep with her too.
Yes, but you had to be careful not to be found out. I mean, it's nothing new. It was really a scandal the way we slept with Jewish women.
What did she say?
Well, we chatted together and she said she was at Göttingen University.
And a girl like that let anyone sleep with her?
Yes, I mean, you couldn't tell that she was a Jewess. She was quite a nice type, too. It was just her bad luck that she had to die with the others.
75,000 Jews were shot there.
The young soldier listening looks pale and shocked.
For many of the listeners, these shocking confessions carried an added chill.
It was really a scandal the way we slept with Jewish women.
The stories of killing Jews touched them personally.
We all tried not to get emotionally involved in it. We tried to remain detached from what we heard.
Fritz was a German Jewish refugee with relatives left behind in Berlin. For the bugging operation to work properly, MI-19 would need hundreds of such native German speakers, men who were also committed to the cause.
the answer was actually staring them in the face. And it was in the British Army's Pioneer Corps, where a number of German Jewish refugees were serving in British Army uniform. They had fled Nazi persecution, and now they were giving something back to Britain for saving their lives.
We felt that what we were doing was, in a way, retribution for what the Nazis had done to us and to other Jews. We felt we were getting back at them, and that was very satisfying. When I told English people at first that I had joined the British Army during the war, their reaction would often be, "How awful for you to have to fight your own people." They cannot understand that they were not our own people anymore. They were our enemies, and we wanted to fight them. We had to fight them.
Fritz and his fellow listeners were amassing damning evidence of German war crimes. Yet there were still far darker secrets to come.
Dialogue dramatized in this programme has been taken from the original MI-19 transcripts. Archive war footage.
By the end of 1943, the war had turned against Germany. North Africa had been lost, the Italians had surrendered, and in Russia, the Germans had been decisively defeated at the world's largest ever tank battle, at Kursk.
A soldier listens on headphones as the bugged conversations are recorded at Trent Park.
For the captured generals at Trent Park, the grim reality of Germany's future was finally sinking in.
One of them says, "We've lost this war."
Der Krieg ist für uns verloren. Und ein Wunder ist der Krieg.
Without the war, unless a miracle happens, only a few complete idiots still believe we can.
For months, the listeners had been hearing a creeping mood of anxiety, recrimination, and guilt.
Von Thoma to Kruvel, recorded 14th of February 1943.
You told me the kind of things that happened. I know myself that there were savage, brutalized louts there who trampled on the bellies of pregnant women and that sort of...
Yes, but these are very isolated cases for which even the SS can't be blamed. I cannot believe that Germans would do such a thing.
I don't think I should have believed it myself if I hadn't actually seen it.
I am the last to defend such atrocities. But you must admit that we were bound to take the most incredibly severe measures to combat the illegal guerrilla warfare in those vast territories.
But the women had nothing whatever to do with it.
Kruvel probably finds it difficult to believe these atrocities because now he's faced with the specter not only of a lost war, but a criminal war as well.
3rd of November.
If you listen to the gentleman here, we've done nothing else but kill everyone off. But if you ask, they were never present themselves. They heard about it from von Thoma.
Even Kruvel's convictions would have been shaken if he had heard the unwitting confessions of other prisoners. These recordings are powerful evidence of atrocities committed not just by Hitler's elite SS, but also by regular German forces. After a routine transport flight, Luftwaffe pilot Fried was taking a break.
I was at Hadern once and had my midday meal with the Waffen-SS battalion there. An SS captain, or whatever he was, said, "Would you like to come along for half an hour? Get a machine gun, let's go." So I went along. I had an hour to spare, and we went to some barracks. And there we slaughtered 1,500 Jews. There were some 20 men with machine guns. It was over in a couple of seconds, and nobody thought anything of it.
You fired too?
Yes, I did. There were women and children there too.
They were inside as well?
Whole families. Some screaming terribly. Others were just apathetic.
One of the myths to come out of the war was that the mass murder genocide was committed by the Waffen-SS. We know now that that was just that, a myth, that the army was complicitous in carrying out the crimes of the Third Reich. This case shows us that conclusively.
What, you fired?
Yes, I did. There were women and children there, too.
The brutality is shocking, but the transcripts raise a question. How could an ordinary person become a genocidal murderer?
Some were screaming terribly, others were just apathetic.
What I find particularly powerful about this extract is precisely that it's so matter-of-fact. This man doesn't have to spit hate. This man doesn't have to tell you lurid stories about why the Jews are so awful and why it's okay to kill them. He just assumes that nobody will have a problem with doing this.
A photo of a soldier about to shoot a civilian in the head.
People can kill, they can do appalling things when they can believe that what they are doing is good, is even noble. And Himmler encompassed that idea in a very powerful metaphor. He described killing Jewish people like killing the rats in the sewers. It's a horrible job. Nobody wants to do it, but only the noblest people are prepared to descend into the sewers to carry out the dirty task in order to preserve civilization up above.
D-Day, 6th of June, 1944.
The British, Canadian, and American troops who landed on the coast of France, north of the lovely town of Caen, in broad daylight this morning, are already several miles inland.
As the Allies advance through Normandy, more prisoners arrive from liberated France.
They are pushing steadily on, backed by the tremendous firepower of heavy British and United States warships.
Among them was the anti-Nazi, General Paul von Felbert. He'd surrendered with little resistance, and in his absence, been sentenced to death for cowardice by Hitler himself. Now von Felbert was to provoke disturbing intelligence when he met fellow inmate, General Heinrich Kittel.
Von Felbert sits down in an armchair and watches Kittel, who's playing patience at a card table.
Were you also in places where Jews had been liquidated?
Yes.
And this was carried out quite methodically?
Yes.
Women and children, everyone?
Everybody. It's horrible. For instance, in Latvia, near Dvinsk, there were mass executions of Jews by the SS. I got up and went outside and said, "What the hell is all this shooting about?" The orderly said to me, "You ought to go over there, sir. You'll see something." 300 men had been driven in from the town. They dug a communal grave, then marched home again. The next day along they came again, men, women, and children. The executioners first laid all the clothes out in a big pile, and then 20 women were made to take up their positions naked on the edge of the trench. Someone gave the command, and the 20 women dropped like ninepins down into the trench. I went away and I thought, I'm going to do something about this. So I went over to the security service man and I said, "Once and for all, I forbid these outside executions where people can look on. If you want to kill people in the woods or somewhere where no one can see, that's your business. But I absolutely forbid another day shooting here." We draw our drinking water from deep springs. We get nothing but corpse water.
What did they do to the children?
They seized three-year-olds by the hair, held them up and shot them with a pistol, threw them in. Saw it for myself.
That's why everyone hates us. Not because of this one incident. Because of all these murders!
Von Felbert looks away angrily.
If one were to destroy all the Jews in the world simultaneously, there wouldn't be anyone left to do the accusing.
It's obvious, it's such a scandal! We don't need a Jew to accuse us! We ourselves must bring the charge! We must accuse those who have done it!
Then we have to admit that our government is all wrong.
It is! It's obvious that it's wrong! No doubt about it. Such a thing is unbelievable.
We are the tools!
Kittle's account of the massacre was carefully filed for future war crime trials.
He saw the mass killings. He saw the mass shootings, and he might have been in the position to say, no, we have to stop this.
Tensions between the generals at Trent Park were reaching breaking point. How far this mirrored the position back in Germany was revealed in an extraordinary turn of events.
News of an assassination attempt on the Führer. The generals at Trent Park gather to listen to the radio. For the second time in this war started by the Jews, there has been an assassination attempt on the Führer. Fate has protected the man who holds the future of Germany in his hands.
MI-19 urgently needed the general's reaction to this attempt on Hitler's life.
The Führer is unharmed.
It made sure that no one missed the German radio broadcast.
Recorded 20th of July, 1944.
Who is this Stauffenberg?
What happened?
He threw the bomb. A Count Stauffenberg, a colonel.
He was on my staff.
He's been shot.
Good God, it can't be true. An excellent man like that. He was my operations officer. Has Himmler taken over the army?
Yes.
Now there'll be a massacre in Germany, and we can only guess the scale.
It's already started.
And no one will die of natural causes.
I heard Hitler's broadcast. He said that the bomb exploded 2 meters away from him. Even so, he wasn't wounded. Well, excuse me, gentlemen.
The generals are all left together.
This is the end.
Good God. Why did the bomb have to be so small?
He didn't want to kill any of the others.
Yes, but that just can't be helped. It must have been a hand grenade. It can't have been anything larger.
Good God. Good old Stauffenberg.
My God, it's a tragedy that he missed.
Yes. It really is.
Though the assassination had failed, it signaled the start of the endgame. As the Allies advanced, fresh prisoners brought news of a regime in its death throes.
All dialogue dramatized in this program has been taken from the original MI-19 transcripts.
4 weeks after the assassination attempt on Hitler, the puffed-up General Dietrich von Koltitz, captured ex-commander of Paris, arrived at Trent Park. His capture brought direct news of Hitler's state of mind. As ever, the listeners were waiting.
Hitler hates us.
Hitler hates us.
Oh, yes, he hates us.
Yes. I saw Hitler 4 weeks ago.
What kind of impression did he make?
Oh, God, well, it was shortly after the assassination attempt, and he was still rather the worse for wear.
Is he still injured?
Well, he's more worn out than anything else. He has put on almost 8 kilos.
Mentally, he's ill. Very ill.
I went into the room, and there he stood. A fat, broken-down old man with festering sores on his hands. They'd been scratched a bit as a result of the attempt on his life. I almost felt sorry for him. He said, "A people which does not surrender can never be defeated." We all went out for lunch. 250 generals were rushed by air from the front. And he talked and talked. After about 7 minutes, 40% of the generals were all snoring. But as usual, once he's worked up, he notices nothing.
While von Koltitz amused the generals with Hitler gossip, MI-19 was about to hear the Nazis' darkest secret of all.
A German soldier recorded 30th of December 1944.
You've no idea of the amount of people killed at Buchenwald while I was there. It could easily be about 30,000.
Accused of being a communist, Private Pfaffenberger had been a political prisoner for over 7 years at the Buchenwald death camp. He'd only been released when Germany became desperate for soldiers.
Senior inmate, any chat told us.
All those who have tattoo marks are to report to me. Needed about 100 of them. Those who had attractive tattoo marks were injected and killed.
They were handed over to the pathologists,
who removed as large a piece of skin as they needed with the tattoo mark on it, and the rest of the body was taken to the crematorium and burnt. The pieces of skin were impregnated and tanned. The wife of the commandant got them, and she had a lampshade made out of them.
A photograph of living, emaciated prisoners on narrow shelved bunks. Clothed prisoners lie dead on the ground. Naked dead prisoners have been piled on a truck. A soldier listens to headphones at Trent Park. Fritz Lustig, listener.
Any mention of atrocities were recorded. The records were specially marked and read because they were possibly used later on for war crime trials.
Pfaffenberger's account is one of the earliest detailed descriptions the Allies had of the death camps.
It says here at the top of Pfaffenberger's transcript, it says his statements appear fantastic, but they're given for what they're worth. In other words, the people listening to this, hearing it, they couldn't actually believe these could be true, these could be taken seriously. And of course, this is a legacy of the Nazis.
This is the great tragedy in our history, that we needed such a terrible lost war as this to come to our senses.
General von Thoma, recorded 26th of January 1945.
For Kruvel and his followers, their world and its values were in ruins.
Kruvel has been heading for mental disaster. He quite openly admits that he's getting into a nervous state. At any time, he's to be found alone in his room, staring into space or fumbling with patience cards.
30th of April, 1945.
We are interrupting our programs to bring you a news flash.
The German radio has just announced that Hitler is dead. I repeat that. The German radio has just announced that Hitler is dead.
As the end of the war approaches, and it's clearly a lost war, it's a day of reckoning, if you will, and they're going to have to account how it got to be the way that it was and what their individual roles were.
I am certain to be named as a war criminal. 18,000 Jews killed at Rostov. Of course, I had nothing to do with the whole business. I was the only known general there. By the way, I'm going to hold my tongue about what little I do know until such time as they pick me out.
Von Kittel walks away. Von Koltitz, recorded 29th of August, 1944.
The worst job I ever carried out, which, however, I carried out with great efficiency, was the liquidation of Jews. I carried out this order down to the very last detail.
He stares at von Thoma, who turns away uneasily and shakes his head.
The whole thing was done on Hitler's orders.
A film reel spins, and light flickers out of the projector, playing a movie titled Nazi Atrocities, Pictorial Proof of German Bestiality. The generals at Trent Park watch it.
With the war over, MI-19 confronted their guests with the shame of the regime they had served.
Many watch regretfully or in shock.
General Eisenhower comes to see with his own eyes the atrocities in Nazi prison camps captured by the Allied armies. He orders German civilians to be compelled to come and look at the ghastly evidence, among them a Nazi officer who was a commander of the camp. Reluctant, the Nazi officer, a camp commander, knows well enough what he'll see.
Inside the wooden building that he's loath to enter, piles of naked, emaciated dead bodies with shaved heads. The commander walks out gravely, then a citizen.
That's the only thing about the thousand-year Reich, which will last for 1,000 years.
Yes. We are disgraced for all time.
The film shows a man lying down with his hands clasped, pleading, and another being helped into a truck. At Trent Park, the bugs are dismantled.
As they strip the stately homes of listening equipment, MI-19 faced a choice. They had 50,000 pages of damning transcripts, but releasing them would mean revealing their methods.
Now, Churchill wanted them released for war crimes trials, and what's now emerging is that there was an intense debate within British intelligence over whether the files should or should not be released.
So there's an exchange of letters. What should we do with this material? Should we use this in the Nuremberg trials, for example? And the answer was very clear. No, we were very successful. We want to be successful in the future as well. So keep it secret, close your mouth, and we lock it away.
The generals are led out of the house.
In the end, the British chose to protect their new methods for the coming Cold War, even at the expense of justice. On the basis of what they said, not one of Trent Park's prisoners was ever convicted of a single war crime.
Heinrich Kittel and Dietrich von Koltitz died in West Germany in the late 1960s. Von Thoma was repatriated, but died 3 years after the war. Many considered him a traitor. Ludwig Kruvel was considered for a senior position in the new post-war German army. He lived until 1958.